You know, once you get the tenant and the property approved for Section 8, it's just maintaining from that point forward. But you're not having to worry about rent collections and following up. And am I going to get a return on my investment based on rent this month?
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Spencer Sutton, and I have with me my co-host, Hunter Tarrin. Hunter, welcome back to the show, man.
Yes, let's rock and roll. This is a good one today. Very excited for this, Spencer. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, this is a very, you know, this is something that we get asked all the time. Everybody wants to know about Section 8 in Birmingham. And so we have brought on our Director of Operations for Birmingham. She is the expert in the market. And Amy Bromberg, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
You know what I love about this show is that Amy is not, she's not going around talking on a bunch of podcasts. She's literally in the trenches with our property managers, kind of leading everybody in Birmingham. And so we're going to get to hear from Amy. You just have tons of experience with Section 8. And that's why I think this is going to add a ton of value to our listeners.
When people ask me about Section 8, I'm asking Amy. So that's why I brought her on. I'm like, let's just,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Amy, tell us about your experience, not just with, you know, Section 8, but before Everness. Kind of, I mean, she's got such an amazing background. Tell us about a little bit about that, so our viewers or listeners know who they're listening to.
Sure. So I've been in and out of the property management industry since I was 19 years old. Started out in multifamily. I had several Section 8 properties during that time. There was actually a portfolio of two properties that we merged together and managed as one that was primarily Section 8 and 1,200 doors. Yeah, so lots of Section 8 experience there. And I've been with Evernest for about a year and a half now. And, you know, kind of relearning after going through private pay and then back into Section 8 was a little bit of a challenge, but we've got it down pat now.
Well, you said you started when you were 19, but you're only 22 now. So that's not all that long, right? I'm kidding. So you've got some great experience. So we're excited to pick your brain. And Hunter's right. I remember when I was taking calls from out-of-state investors all over the country. I mean, this is something that comes up in almost every conversation.
Like, well, Hunter, it comes up in almost every conversation with an out-of-state investor. Recently, though, that's where the conversation's been starting. So I've had just in the last 2 months, maybe since the beginning of this year, I don't know, guys, if it's like there's some guru on TikTok or YouTube talking about it right now. I don't know if there's been major articles written. I mean, shame on me, man. I should be ahead of this stuff. But like, that's the call.
I mean, you're on TikTok. Don't you know who's spreading this information out?
I'm struggling to get my TikTok stuff up, you guys. So any encouragement is helpful. But, the reality is we've been having a lot more calls these days about people. They call in and they say, look, I'm interested in investing in Birmingham. Do you guys do Section 8? Or the form they fill out online says, hey, I need a property manager with experience in Section 8. And of course, lots of benefits to the program. We have some investors that we've worked with and have built large portfolios, 30, 50 homes where their entire portfolio is dedicated to Section 8. We have a lot of experience. We know that there can be some positives, but definitely a lot of stuff to look out for. And I love having these conversations because it's always like, hey, this is a chance to show there are some surprises, like there are the ins and outs of it that you need to know if you're investing in Section 8 in Birmingham specifically. And Amy is going to help us dig through that because she's absolute pro. So excited for this one.
Where do we want to kick this thing off? I mean, Amy, why don't you give us a little bit of a background as far as Evernest in Birmingham? Tell us a little bit about our portfolio, how many properties we're managing, what percent do you think is Section 8? So why don't we just kind of kick off there?
Yeah, so Birmingham, the portfolio currently has just over 1,100 doors, and I would say about 25 to 30% of those are going to be Section 8.
And we're going to get into the process. So people are going to hear the process, but let's just jump straight into why people love Section 8. Because I'm like Hunter, I know people that like their entire portfolio, they're saying, I'll only deal with Section 8. But then I also know investors who say, I only want private pay. Like I will not, it doesn't matter if I'm in low to moderate income areas, I'm only going to deal with private pay. So, you know, when you hear both sides of that, I know that there's positives, but I also know that there's some drawbacks with dealing with Section 8. So why don't we kick off by talking about like, what do you think are the main attraction? What are the benefits of dealing with Section 8?
I think investors see it as guaranteed rent. You know, once you get the tenant and the property approved for Section 8, it's just maintaining from that point forward. But you're not having to worry about rent collections and following up. And am I going to get a return on my investment based on rent this month? You know, it's just a lot less during the tenancy, but it's more on the front end and the net renewal.
To your knowledge, has Section 8 ever changed the rent amount on you? Meaning, have they ever decreased the rent amount for investors, or has it pretty much been steady? And then it's the investor's responsibility to ask for a rent increase.
Right. I have not experienced Section 8 decreasing rent.
Okay. And so, okay, so we know guaranteed rent is obviously the big one. And do residents typically pay? I mean, does the program typically pay all of the rent, or is it sometimes split up?
That's going to be a mixed bag. It's based on what the tenant qualifies for. So Section 8 could pay a large portion and the tenant could pay as little as $5 as, you know, what's allocated as their portion. So it really just depends. But I would say the majority of what we currently have, Section 8's paying the full amount.
And how does it work when a resident, and I know I'm kind of going off of the benefits, but this guaranteed rent is a big deal. So let's say an owner meets with you or your team and says, hey, I bought this house. It's in Center Point and I want to put it out there. I want a Section 8 resident and I want it rented for $750. But the person who applies and is approved, let's just say their voucher is only for $730. Like what happens in those cases?
We would reach out to the owner and ask them if they would be interested in dropping the rental rate because we would have, you know, the approved voucher that was $730. So chances are if that's the case and the owner's going to consider that, the property may have been on the market for a little bit longer and they're likely to take that decrease and go ahead and move forward with the Section 8 tenant.
But if it hasn't been on the market for a while, they're usually going to say, no, let's just keep it out there.
That really is going to depend on the owner, honestly. We have some owners that won't take less than $750 if it's listed at $750, and then we have others that are more lenient.
You know, I remember back in my days, I knew investors who, because they would be renting their own properties and they would put it out there for $850 or $900, you know, they would accept Section 8. And a Section 8 person would come and say, hey, I have a voucher. You're asking that for $950. I have a voucher for $850. I'll pay you the difference, the $100 difference. And some people would do that. Now, I've always advised investors, don't do that because that is not going to be in the lease and that resident is not going to be obligated to pay that. And so if they just stop paying that, there's really nothing you can do about it. You can't like evict them from the property or anything. You're only going to be like writing down on the lease exactly what's in the, you know, what the program has decided to pay.
Yeah, I would say it's extremely unlikely to collect on that. Same page there.
Yeah. So, okay. So what's another pro for Section 8?
Can I ask real quick, what about utilities? What about utilities? So how are utilities handled with Section 8 properties?
The tenants are responsible for their own utilities. And if Section 8 is willing to cover that for the tenant, that's something that they set up separately. We do not manage utilities for an occupied property.
Yeah, so other pros, and maybe Amy, you can speak to this one. This one I hear from Section 8 investors. You know, obviously we have systems in place and the infrastructure for maintaining the quality and, you know, keeping the property in great shape. That's our job as a property manager. And we have high standards for that. We're not slumlords, right? But Section 8 also has their inspection. And so a benefit of that, and I definitely hear both sides of the coin often.
Is this a benefit?
but some folks really like that. They've got a third party that are coming in. And so tell us, Amy, a little bit about what you see on maybe Section 8 inspections and why would investors like that if they're an annual inspection from a third party?
Yeah. I mean, generally, those are going to document the overall condition of the property. Section 8 can disqualify a tenant based on their behavior. So it kind of ensures that the tenant's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And also that things are functional in the property. You know, they're going to check for operational appliances if we've provided appliances. They're going to check for smoke detectors. They're going to check windows and security. So they have a big, long list that they go through and then send that report back to us.
Yeah, we actually hired Wayne McGinnis, who was a Section 8 inspector. This is way back in the day. We hired Wayne McGinnis on our team. And he was a property manager. So he would actually go out and walk the houses. So it's kind of like a PMT. And it was great having Wayne go walk houses because he would say, okay, this is what needs to be done to this house to get it Section 8 ready. And we 100% knew that he was accurate. I think I was thinking of another pro that people like for Section 8. And again, I'm kind of torn on is that a good thing for the property owner for the Section 8 to go in there? I think it is. If you have an owner who doesn't want to fix anything, then obviously it's not going to be good because he or she is going to have to get it fixed. I think another pro, and there's probably not been studies done on this. I happen to think that a Section 8 resident, if you're providing a good product, a good house, I think a Section 8 resident tends to stay in the home longer. And that is a tremendous pro because it really is a hassle. It's a hassle for the resident to move, and it's obviously a hassle for the owner. But I don't know, Amy, if you think this, you've had a lot of experience with Section 8. I've just kind of seen that when a Section 8 person finds a house, it's almost like they definitely don't want to be off the program. And so they just, man, they'll stay in that house for a long period of time.
Absolutely. Because not everyone does accept Section 8, right? So their opportunities are limited as to the property. So if they find one that's a good fit for them and everything is already, you know, in the works and good to go, all the tenant has to do is be there for the annual inspection for Section 8. That's it. So it definitely improves the renewal odds for that tenant.
Yeah, they tend to stay longer.
Maybe not data supported, and there's probably data out there that might confirm this. But even speaking with Craig Bankston, our rehab manager, he used to have a bunch of Section 8 properties himself, and he liked them because of this longer tenancy. On average, you know, he said something like maybe 2 to 4 years for a private pay tenant versus, you know, 5 to 7 years for a Section 8 tenant. Because to Amy's point, you find it and you don't want to give that up. It's a great place. I mean, that's, in essence, that's another benefit in and of itself. I mean, if you're thinking altruistically, like, and as an investor in putting your money out of state, like, you are providing a service for someone that needs a home, right? That is the whole goal of the Section 8 program, is to provide funding and assistance for folks who can't do it on their own. And if you're able to invest in the home, make it a good place, and, you know, and be on the Section 8 program, you're filling a need in the market.
Yeah, I actually, you know, think it's absolutely a great program. The way I've seen it work the best, I had a resident out in Midfield. The street was Midwood Avenue. It's a fantastic little area in Midfield. If you could ever find a house there, it's incredible. It's like a little oasis of probably 15 streets that are just beautifully kept, and the houses are all great. But this person was on, I want to say she was on Jefferson County Section 8, and I was getting $724, it was kind of an odd number, $724 a month. She was paying, like you said, Amy, she was paying like a little $5 of that, and they were paying a majority. But over the course of 5 to 6 years on the program, she started to pay more and more. Like, she got a job. She started, like, her situation improved until at the very end, Section 8 was only paying a very small percentage, like $30, and she was paying the rest. To me, that's the point of the program, right? It's a temporary program. It's not meant to be a forever thing for people to stay in. And so it can work really, really well.
What an awesome success.
Yeah, I know. You don't really see a lot of those, but I was really, really pumped for her, and she was a fantastic resident. All right, let's talk about maybe some of the drawbacks to Section 8. And I'd be curious, Amy, kind of your initial thoughts on this.
Yeah, so when the tenant submits their RAFTA to us, and I know we'll probably talk about the process later on, but the application process can take a little while. The tenant fills out their portion of the RAFTA paperwork, brings that to the office, and that's their request for tenancy approval. So that's filled out with the applicant and their caseworker. And then the property management company fills out their portion, sends it to the caseworker. That's if the housing authority has caseworkers. There are some that have eliminated caseworkers and are all sharing responsibilities equally. So just knowing, you know, those ins and outs of the contact information with the jurisdiction that you're working with is important. But then once all of that is approved and the caseworker signs off on it, we're waiting for an inspector to go out. They could go out within 48 hours. They could be delayed a little bit. It could be the following week. We just don't know. Then we'll receive that inspection report back and it will be pass or fail. Fail, we'll have the opportunity to make the repairs there. And then if it's passed, you know, great, good to go. We can get the tenant moved in. If we send it out for inspection the second time after a failed inspection and it doesn't pass again, then the tenant has to start all over. So when we're managing the rehabs and managing the maintenance on these properties, we have a higher approval rating than we do when the owners are managing. And that's because we can get our teams out there faster to make those repairs. And also, if we have an investor that is focused on Section 8, we know generally what they're looking for. And so we'll include that in our rehab estimate. You know, this is Section 8 is going to be checking for these specific items. So we want to make sure that these are addressed.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, you know, if you're out of state or even if you're local and kind of trying to handle it yourself, you usually, unless you have a lot of experience with Section 8, you don't really know. And I would imagine it's going to be typically, I mean, they don't have a problem failing you. It's not like they're going to overlook anything.
Right. And we've actually had inspections that failed the first time. We made the required repairs and then a different inspector went out the second time and fail the property again. But because the repairs listed were different, we had the opportunity to make corrections.
So how long is all that? Let's just say that it flows pretty nicely. The property, you put a property on the market, it's rent ready, what we believe is rent ready. Let's say somebody comes and looks at it and submits the RAFTA, because they have to come to the office and drop that off, correct?
Yeah, they have to drop that off in person. And we usually tell them that it'll take us about 24 hours to get that submitted because we have to fill out our portion and make sure that everything is correct as well.
So we fill out our portion and we mail it to Section 8?
We scan it and email it.
Wow. Okay. They've started accepting electronic copies. That's awesome. So we send it. And you said, so how long do you think it typically takes to get the whole thing done? Before the owner actually, because all they really care about is, hey, when am I going to receive rent?
Right. And that's going to depend. But I would say, you know, worst case scenario, we're looking at a month or so. Best case scenario, we're looking at 2.5 weeks. Usually with a section, they'll have a move-in date that's further out because they know the process takes time. So it's not going to be we have an approved applicant and they can move in next week kind of situation.
Yeah. When I was back in that office, Amy, I was in one of those offices that we had a guy on our team, Nick Goudreau, and he tried to automate the entire Section 8 when we were onboarding new properties. And let's say they were a Section 8 property. So some of your investors out there, Hunter, may be buying Section 8 properties. And when you purchase it from somebody else, you've got to go through a process to get it into the new owner's name. We tried to automate all of that so we wouldn't have to really like go down there. It was a huge failure. Like we had to still go down there. Like I even was going down there standing in line and I knew my caseworker, typically the caseworker. And I'm like, hey, I'm back with Evernest, although we were GK Houses at the time. I'm back with Evernest and we've got another property we're bringing over. It's just such a pain. So I kind of think that one of the cons, like you're saying, is the time it takes to get somebody in and approved. And then also just really Section 8, and at least in Birmingham, with Birmingham Section 8, it's relatively low tech and kind of archaic. It's not like you can get a lot done that's not done manually. But it sounds pretty good. What you all are doing, it sounds pretty good.
When I joined Evernest, we were using paperwork that was printed out and whited out and then made a copy of, because we didn't have any blank originals. And I think COVID really changed things for the housing authorities and forced them to go online and have it be more electronic. So we can fax it or we can email it. And then from that point, it's the time-consuming piece is the PM following up with the caseworker or the support email, wherever it went, saying, hey, have you received this? What's the update? And oftentimes we won't get a response. So that leads to frustration. They'll read it and then they won't respond until they have something to respond with. So it's kind of hurry
up. But if you go stand in line, they'll respond. That's the problem. Yeah. So
yeah, the way I sum it up, anytime you're adding a third party to the equation or to a process, right? Like, you should expect additional time and additional costs, and maybe just additional costs because time is a cost. But, and that's kind of where we start talking about some of the cons of the process. There is a lot of process. There is a lot of red tape. It is an extra few steps of approval, and your hands are a little tied because if you want that to go through, you've got to give them an opportunity to go through that, right? They can't just blindly give out vouchers and approve homes because they have a standard that's set. So there's like the positive side of the standard setting. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the process and the cost of time and additional money to get it up and running, because they have been known to be a little picky on the inspections. Is that right, Amy?
Yes. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, we've had two different inspectors go out. One failed the property for X, Y, and Z. We made those repairs. And then a second inspector went back out to check the repairs and found something else. So it just depends on who goes out and what they see. And, you know, we do our best to prevent that on the front end during the rehab, but that's not always going to be the case.
And so I want to talk about something specifically too, in terms of the FMRs. So we've heard this term FMR, for those who don't or maybe aren't as familiar with Section 8, it's fair market rent. And you can find these posted. They come up with, they basically for every county and then from a statewide basis too, of the HUD, the Housing and Urban Development Department for the U.S., right? Like this is what they do, is housing assistance are one of the things they do. And they come up with these calculations for fair market rent in a certain county. And it's usually based on number of bedrooms, kind of very much a general like starting point. And then they add things like inflation and like recent trends in a market. So they may pick up on the last, you know, 6 months or so of movement in a very hot real estate market to try to catch more recent trends. What a lot of folks will do when they start looking at Section 8 is looking at the HUD website for these posted fair market rents, because they've got to underwrite and decide if this deal is good or not, find out how much they can get in rent. And that's usually the first question I get. How much can we get for rent for Section 8 property? Mm-hmm. Well, I pulled up the website, and if you look at right now for Jefferson County, the 3-bedroom rate is $1,376. Amy, tell me, are you seeing that all 3 bedrooms rented under Section 8 in our portfolio are getting $1,376? Let me ask you it this way. How many of our 3-bedroom Section 8 properties are getting $1,376?
None that I am aware of.
But you're also, you're dumping in there, Hunter, things that we signed 6 years ago, right? So, and I'm not saying that new houses that are coming in are $1,300. So what's the discrepancy?
So what I've learned is, and because I was blown away at this, I've seen the Section 8 vouchers come through. I've seen that in West Birmingham, you know, Amy's saying, okay, we're getting approved for 900, 950, maybe some 3 bedrooms around 1,000. And I might've seen stuff in East Birmingham, maybe closer to Pinson or Center Point area, where they're getting a little closer to 1,200, maybe, you know. But why the discrepancy? It's because Section 8 and the Jefferson County Housing Authority, same with Birmingham and Bessemer, are still going to do a local neighborhood analysis and not pay more than that fair market for that neighborhood anyway. You know, if nothing in West Birmingham is getting over 1,000 for a 3-bedroom, they're not just going to all of a sudden pay $1,300. Right. The more that they can save, if they can save $300 on a voucher, right, in that sense, they can provide more housing to others. So that's their goal, is to minimize the costs and keep it, you know, keep it reasonable so that they can provide more housing.
Yeah, that's good to know. So your investors who are out there who are looking at these, looking at this website and trying to calculate in their mind, they need to definitely be careful about doing that. Amy, going back to cons of Section 8, I've got one, and I'd love to know your thoughts on it. Something that I think is somewhat of a con. If I were an investor, I'd be thinking about a lot of the properties that we see go into the Section 8 program are older house stock. You know, there are these houses that have been around for a while. They could have been around from as early in the West End, as early as, you know, the very, very early 1900s, all the way to, you know, parts of the East Side and further out west in the 60s and 70s. Those are typically the houses you see, everything in between. But what I noticed is that these residents, because they're on the Section 8 program, live in the home more than most private pay, right? So they're, let's just say they're on the program and they don't have a job. So they're not leaving the house. They're living in the house. They're spending day and night in the house. So they're flushing more commodes. They're flipping light switches. They're brushing up against walls. And so I've noticed that, and I'd love to know your thoughts, just a lot more wear and tear. And so you typically, especially with older house stock, you're typically having more maintenance and repairs for these houses with a Section 8 tenant versus a private pay.
We definitely see that in Birmingham, just based on the things that you said. There is more time spent at home. There is more general wear and tear. So yeah, I'm in agreement with that.
So looking at all these things, I mean, you know, it's really, no matter what you do, you want to find a great resident. So whether it's private pay or whether it's Section 8, like just because they're Section 8, we're not just throwing everything away and saying, hey, it doesn't matter who they are. The government's going to pay for their housing. Like we still want to walk through the approval process with them. So I think for an investor, they just need to really kind of weigh the pros and the cons and then decide, you know, hey, if it takes me an extra 30 to 45 days to place a resident because they're on Section 8, because I have to go through all the paperwork, is it worth it if I'm able to keep them another 2 to 3 years longer than I would maybe a private pay? And, oh, by the way, I'm also going to have more repairs and maintenance. So all this stuff kind of factors in my opinion, to the decision that somebody needs to make.
For sure. And just because they qualify for that program doesn't mean that there are not going to be problems. Not to
correct
tell a horror story, but thinking about negatives, I mean, we had an inherited Section 8 tenant, transferred everything over. Section 8 was making payments. The tenant, long story short, was disqualified from the program during the lease term. We'd actually just renewed. Owner had made repairs at the annual inspection. So he's, you know, that was about $7,000 in repairs. One of those was an appliance that needed replacing, just some bigger stuff that they required. And then she was disqualified from the program. And we're sitting there having to go through the eviction process. Section 8 stopped sending money because the tenant won't move. So really, I mean, I think investors are looking at it as guaranteed rent, but you're going to have higher costs for maintaining the property. And then it's not always going to be perfect.
Yeah, you're investing in C to D class areas, typically in a Section 8 program. And with that just comes added risk, right? The schools aren't necessarily as good. There's higher crime areas in some of these instances. And so you just gotta weigh those things.
Quick question. I just thought about that on renewals as well. So we know, or at least we have insights to suggest that renewals are more common, or, you know, like the tenancy is longer. What about the price on renewals? Because we've run into that even with our private pay homes, where our leases might have a 5% or some, you know, typical lease might have a 3 to 5% adjustment for inflation, or like a renew, if you're going to renew, it's going to be at least 3 to 5%. But in some cases, we have the ability to pull market data and ask for more. We have seen a lot of growth. We're expecting that to continue, for rent prices to appreciate faster than home prices right now, because homes are expensive to buy. We're getting a bigger pool of renters in, and that's pushing up demand with the same amount of supply. So you see the prices go up. The question is, on Section 8s, how easy is it to get an increase, what does that process look like? And do you typically see, you know, that 5%? Are you able to get more?
Typically, we are able to see the 5%. The process varies based on the municipality. Some have forms that we have to fill out requesting an increase. Others require we send notification to the tenant first, and that's all that they need is to see that we told the tenant. Others don't respond when we submit that increase. And, you know, we start reaching out to our renewals well in advance of their lease expiration. Section 8 typically requires we reach out 60 days prior to the end of their lease to request that increase. And then even so, it won't be granted until they come out and the property passes the inspection.
And how long does that typically take? Does it take a certain amount of time? I mean, you know, we're reaching out way in advance. Do you hear, sometimes you don't hear back at all, but I'm guessing in some cases it just takes a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. I would say we start reaching out to the caseworker as early as 90 days out, maybe even 120 if we know, you know, have a game plan with the owner, know that the tenant wants to stay. And oftentimes it's, you know, we'll let you know, or we'll let you know, or we're going to schedule the inspection closer to July. So then it just continues to be a follow-up. So it's on the PM's brain, you know, have I bumped them this week? Have I bumped them this week? And I know that it gets on their nerves, and I hate that. I hate to be that squeaky wheel, but we also have to be sure that we're reminding them, you know, of these requests and what's coming so that we can best advocate for our owners and the tenants.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, this has been awesome. I think one, because I've learned a few nuggets as well. Of course, I always learn something when I'm hanging out with Amy, but also because I'm really getting a lot of these questions on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to provide this resource. And now I can, anytime someone asks, I could just say, hey, instead of us chatting it up,
here's the podcast.
Episode, what, I don't know what number it is, 58 or whatever it is, but yeah, listen here, you got the pro talking.
Well, Amy, I appreciate you being on the show. You've been asking me to be on this show for so long. Like, you have just been pestering me because you love the spotlight. So thank you for joining us.
You know, Spencer, ever since I started considering joining Evernest and listening to you and Matthew on the podcast, it's been a lifelong dream of mine, and I'm able to execute on that today. So thank you.
If you can't hear her sarcasm, she's definitely being sarcastic. She probably listened to one episode and then didn't listen to any more. And then B, she's not asked to be on here, but we appreciate you being here. You're doing a fantastic job. And listen, you and your team in that office are on the front lines of it. Hunter gets to talk to owners who are excited about investing all the time. I get to record podcasts, but you and your team are really doing the hard work. So we appreciate everything you do.
I'll mention too, look, you know, Amy works really hard. Her team is incredible. Amy's one of the best leaders I've ever had. She's silent. I mean, you can close your ears if you don't like hearing public praise here, but well-deserved. Amy, she's a silent leader. She knows how to empower her people. We've got a great operation in Birmingham, and the reason that we're able to bring on so many doors at the speed at which we are is because we have the bench to support it. And that starts with Amy and her leadership. I love that she's taken the opportunity, the initiative this year to really get out and with me and meet some of these investors. We've been working with a lot of folks who are at scale or really trying to get to that next level. And when they come into town, when you guys visit, like, we treat Amy to lunch because she's the one that's in the trenches with you. And her and I have kind of figured out a great process for that. So we'd love to have you in town if you're considering investing in Birmingham. If you want to work with a dream team, it starts with Amy. Let's set something up on the calendar.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Leave us a review if you'd like to, and we'll be back next time with another episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast.